Good afternoon. Welcome on into Kildare Focus. It is Wednesday, the 25th of January. You're listening to KFM. It's Caoimhe Hearney with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Aoife Rafter. She is from Breathe Work Coaches in Naas. She's also a Naas woman. She has cystic fibrosis and she also has cervical cancer. And she'll be raising awareness about cervical cancer on Awareness Week now, encouraging women to go for regular checkups. We'll be speaking to Cathal Berry. He's an independent TD for Kildare South and a former deputy commander of the Army Ranger Wing. German government approves Leopard tanks deliveries to Ukraine. And Cathal will be telling us all about that. We'll be speaking to Jean Gilger, Educational Policy and Development Officer at the Education and Training Boards Ireland. Schools in Kildare are invited to enter a new Irish language competition, Spree. And then last but not least, we'll be speaking to Paul Meskell's mammy, Dervla Meskell, about his recent Oscar nomination. Do stay tuned for that. Of course, if you want to get in touch with the show, you know what to do.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, this week is Cervical Cancer Prevention Week. And what does it mean to end cervical cancer? And what do you need to do? Well, I'm joined now on the line by Aoife Rafter. She herself does have cervical cancer and she has cystic fibrosis, which she's been living with since she was a child. Good afternoon, Aoife.
Hi, Caoimhe. How are you?
I'm great, Aoife. Aoife, just start off by telling us, you know, I suppose your journey through it, you know, from cystic fibrosis and then into cervical cancer and how you deal with that.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a crazy one. I just want to be clear, though, for everyone listening that I don't have cervical cancer anymore. Thankfully, I was diagnosed with cervical cancer when I was 27. I was off living in Australia and having the time of my life, but I couldn't ignore these really obvious symptoms that I was having. And I suppose as a young girl, like in your 20s, there's a lot of things you can kind of put down to just like being the norm, or maybe you just don't have the education around, especially for my generation. We're only kind of getting this talk happening now. So through talking to my girlfriends, I eventually realized, okay, like these symptoms are not normal, and went for an unscheduled smear test, despite already actually of having one that had come back clear. So yeah, eventually I got the diagnosis that I had cervical cancer when I was 27.
That's awful. And tell me, I suppose, what are the symptoms that you had? I'm sure it's different for everyone.
Yeah, I was really, really lucky that I had nearly every symptom. So one really obvious one that I had, but because I have cystic fibrosis, I can get muscular pain, so I didn't think too much of it. But I had a lot of pelvic pain, which is literally just like pain in the groin, like a stiffness, like it feels quite muscular. So that's a really, really obvious one, that there's something gynecological going on down there. Then you can also get some discomfort during sex or after sex, bleeding between periods or after intercourse, or for other women, bleeding after the menopause. A lot of those symptoms now can be signs of other gynecological issues, but just to know that like it's not normal to feel pain during or after intercourse, and it's not normal to bleed after intercourse or between periods. So definitely like listen to your body and follow up on those things.
Okay, so when you were 27, you were in Australia. Was it easy for you to get that checkup over there, Aoife, or what way did it work?
Yeah, I was really lucky because in Ireland, it was unfortunately and absolutely dreadfully, the cervical check scandal was kind of going on, and we couldn't detect for HPV in our smear tests in Ireland at the time, which thankfully we can now. But Australia could detect for HPV. So yeah, I came back with a HPV virus, which is a sexually transmitted virus. Most people that are sexually active will have HPV at least once in their lives, because it's skin-to-skin contact is how it's passed on. So unfortunately, condoms don't protect us from HPV. So it's really important now that we can do that in our smear tests. So I was positive for HPV, but my tumour at the time was so high up in the cervical canal that it actually wasn't detected in the smear test. So yeah, I just was really lucky that the HPV could be detected, and I still, because of that factor, went on for more testing, and they eventually found the tumour.
That's how they found the tumour after more testing. It's just crazy. And what was your reaction when you were told, Aoife? Like, was it total shock?
I totally went to the worst place. Like, even before I was told of my treatment course, and even when I was told that I was, you know, quite lucky and things had been caught at a good time, I still thought the worst. I still went to the darkest places in my head. And my life was just an absolute mess until probably only like a year ago. It was a really hard battle.
Yeah. I know from following you on Instagram, Aoife, and different social media accounts that you actually went on to have a hysterectomy, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. So I was told that I would need a hysterectomy at 27. Like, I was travelling in Australia. The last thing on my mind was fertility. It wasn't something I was, like, aiming towards anytime soon for me. So that was huge. I just knocked me off my socks. I didn't really expect it. Then after the after the hysterectomy, I was due to have 25 sessions of radiotherapy over that Christmas. So that was Christmas right before COVID. So I literally had finished all my treatment in the January, and then COVID came, and obviously I had to be very, very careful as a vulnerable person then for the next 2 years.
Yeah, it's awful. It's awful news to be told at that age, because like you said, everyone assumes and people don't think of their fertility until something like that happens. And then you're told that you have to do that. And I suppose, how did you take it being told that you had to have that hysterectomy and then obviously not being able to carry your own children?
Yeah, it's definitely something that still affects me. It's something I'm trying to learn to deal with through like alternative kind of methods. I became a breathwork coach because I find it really helpful in that way to release emotion. Sometimes there's only so far we can get with talk therapy, and I found it difficult to get a lot of talk therapy than the sufficient support that I needed during my cancer battle. So yeah, I do think that there's definitely more space for that to improve. Fertility is a huge thing. Like, it's massive for women, like, especially the way our lives are changing now. It's something we're putting off to later down the line. But I think, like, it's just an incredible thing to have to go through at any stage of life. And I'm just really lucky that I can sit here and tell you that I have done that.
Yeah, and it's brilliant that you've come through it and you're here to tell the tale. And we'll come back to the breathe work coaching in a minute, Aoife. But before that, I just want to ask you, in terms of, I suppose, cervical checks, why do you think Irish women put it off so much?
I guess fear of the unknown and just being afraid of the medical setting, being anxious in a medical setting. Health anxiety is a real thing. Living with a lung disease my entire life, I'm fully aware that, you know, that is the norm for most people. I was lucky that I didn't really have that aspect because I basically grew up in hospitals. But I definitely feel like that is a part of it. And yeah, our minds just naturally do go to the worst place if we don't work on our mindset. If we're not into that kind of work, we will generally just go to that worst place. But I mean, cervical cancer is affecting like 260 people a year. And only like the end of last year, we did lose like three amazing women in the space of 9 weeks to cervical cancer, all within their 30s or early 40s. And it was like a really difficult time. But like, as I was saying earlier, like a lot of the symptoms I explained for cervical cancer could just be a sign of anything else fertility wise, or maybe just something that needs to be monitored within your gynecological system. So I do always advise, even if you do have symptoms and you get a clear smear test, like still follow up with a gynae, because it's so important. Like, your body is telling you something is up, so you should listen.
It's so interesting that you say that, to follow up with a gynecologist, Aoife, because I think as Irish women, it's not something that we tend to do. You've lived abroad, you've lived in Australia, I've lived away as well, and there seems to be much more of an emphasis on it in other jurisdictions for women to have a specific doctor for these things. But here, for many women, like definitely our mothers, might not have ever seen a gynecologist until they were pregnant. And there is a taboo around that for women, and they feel awkward about going in, getting the smear test. Like, it can be, for some women, it can feel invasive, can't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is invasive, let's face it. Like, any foreign object into our bodies. It's invasive. But it's also about like taking responsibility for your health, because if you don't do that, nobody else is going to do that. Like even the taking that first step of getting your checks, that's really only the first step. Like if you don't feel heard by a consultant, it's okay to speak up and, you know, advocate for yourself and say, maybe I need a different consultant. Maybe I need somebody to come in with me the next time I see this doctor or have this check done. Like, it's okay to do that. I think following your gut is really the power to everything, really.
Mm. So you're a breathwork coach, Aoife, and you also have your own website, breathewithaoife.ie. And just tell us a little bit about that and what it entails, I suppose.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So basically, as I was saying, I didn't really get a lot of the support that I had hoped to I would get during my cervical cancer battle. And because of my treatment, I actually also went into the menopause. So being in menopause, being in COVID, being cocooned and locked up, like, was really difficult on my mental health. So it, like most people go to holistic alternatives in a point of desperation, looking for any kind of support. And that's where I found the power of my breath. Ironically, I have a lung disease. It's not like very common to be able to use the breath in this way, but it's fantastic for getting into the subconscious, releasing any of that trapped emotion that we don't always deal with, that always turns back up if we don't deal with it, and stress, and, you know, getting our bodies into that like kind of homeostasis and parasympathetic nervous system where everything is calm and we're not in that fight and flight space anymore. So yeah, I've been holding virtual events, in-person events, and just trying to get everybody to breathe together and take that time for themselves.
Okay, so one of these classes then, Aoife, it literally just focuses on breathing and how you can control your emotions, your body, and make yourself feel better through breathing.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to do one to understand what can happen, because it is quite unbelievable. Like, what can happen when we just go quiet, we turn inward and focus on this specific breathing pattern that can really just bring up things that we've tried to push down in our bodies. And they can often, these things like can be emotional releases that have been causing us pain or causing us so much anxiety or stress or fear for the future. A lot of that comes up, and a lot of reassurance is then kind of found within ourselves. It's really quite remarkable.
And Aoife obviously is a Nace woman, like I said, former past pupil of St. Mary's College Nace, like myself. And Aoife was a year ahead of me in that school. And Aoife's holding these classes. You can get them online, like she said. They're here in Kildare, and also she has clients down in Wexford. So if you're ever maybe on holidays over the summer in Wexford, you can go along there too. You can find her on @breathewithaoife, or you can email her hello@breathewithaoife.com, and you'll find all of the information there. And it's a great story and a great local story there, so please do follow up if you feel like you could benefit from some breathing work. And to be honest, I'd say most people probably can, Aoife, can't they?
No, absolutely, Aoife.
Okay, that's Aoife Rafter there. Thanks very much, Aoife.
Kildare Focus with Aoife Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, many of you will have heard that Germany will send Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine and approve their re-export from partner countries. German government's approved spokesperson Stefan Herbertsiet has said today. And I'm joined now in the studio by Kildare South Independent TD Cathal Berry and former Deputy Commander of the Army Ranger Wing. Good afternoon, Cathal.
Good afternoon, Aoife, and it's great to be here.
It's great to have you in the studio, Cathal. Cathal, how significant is this news today?
Yeah, a very significant development, as you were saying. So Germany has decided to provide main battle tanks, some of their main battle tanks, to Ukraine. And also the Americans are on the cusp of announcing something similar with their main battle tanks. But more significantly as well is the Germans have allowed the re-export of their Leopard 2 tanks. So there's about 2,000 Leopard 2 tanks in European armies all over the continent. And now basically Germany has said if any country wants to send them to Ukraine, it's entirely their prerogative should they wish.
Okay, Leopard 2 tanks, most people probably wouldn't know what that means. Like, are they a special kind of tank? Are they much better than a regular tank? What are they like? Yeah,
so they're a very, very modern, very, very advanced piece of weaponry. And as a general rule, the NATO main battle tanks would be about a generation ahead of the Russian vehicles. So it would really give Ukraine a significant edge. And I think the plan here is to form an armoured brigade in the Ukrainian army made up of Western main battle tanks and use it over the summer period and to liberate some of the land that was captured by the Russians last year. So that's pretty much the plan. So you'd be looking at Leopard tanks from Germany and maybe about five or six other countries. And the Americans are most likely going to provide Abrams tanks, about 50 of them. And the British said that they'll be providing 14 of their Challenger 2 tanks as well. So a significant development for sure.
How would these American tanks compare to the Leopard 2 tanks that are being sent?
Yeah, very similar in many ways. So a lot of NATO and Western weaponry are they're called what this word is interoperable. So they're very used to being exercised together. The significant difference between the Abrams tank and what a Challenger and the Leopard is that the Abrams tank is actually driven by an aircraft engine. So it actually needs aviation fuel rather than diesel. So diesel is needed for the Leopard and for the Challenger tank, the British and the German. And then aviation fuel is needed for the American vehicle. But I mean, they're used to working together. It's just a little bit more complex from a logistics point of view, but I'm sure they'll be able to work it out.
Okay, there has been reluctance on the side of the Germans to send these tanks for a number of days. It has escalated. Why do you think there was such a reluctance?
Yeah, a number of reasons. First of all, the German government is very similar to our own. It's a three-party coalition, and it takes time to get consensus when there's a three-party coalition. Obviously, there's historical, legacies as well. From the Second World War, Germany didn't want to be seen to be providing tanks to attack Russia. Thirdly, Germany didn't want to be seen to be the only country providing these very, very distinctive main battle tanks. So they didn't want any repercussions falling on Germany in isolation, that they want to be part of an international coalition, so there's backup of the 30 other NATO countries as well as Ukraine.
There is a worry, I suppose, Cathal, from the Western side of things that this could escalate, further and harsher fighting on the battlefield. What would you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's probable. I think the fighting, so we would anticipate that the weather is going to improve in Ukraine probably around March, so into springtime, and the fighting is going to get very, very intense March, April, May. The fighting this year is going to be far more intense than last year as well. So there's always a risk of escalation. In fact, that's the most likely scenario. I would say if you look at the quality of the Russian troops versus the Ukrainian troops, what's most likely going to happen, and the base case for a number of the people assessing the situation, is that Ukrainians are probably going to target the Crimea Peninsula over the summer with a view to liberating it, and that's likely to happen. So it looks like sometime in the late summer the Crimea Peninsula would probably return to Ukrainian hands, but we don't know how the Russian Federation will respond to that.
Okay, so it's likely that Crimea will be liberated by the end of the summer, you reckon, going on what has happened so far?
That's the most likely scenario. Again, the Russian Federation will also get a vote in that. But if you look at how the quality of Ukrainian forces they've significantly outmaneuvered, they've outfoxed, and they've outperformed the Russian armed forces consistently for the last 11 months. And that pattern, that trajectory is likely to continue.
Okay, how have they outperformed, Cathal? Because we see, obviously, Russia have a lot more, I suppose, manpower behind them. They're a bigger country. Is it that they have the Western support, or is it that they're just tactically smarter?
Yeah, an excellent question. A number of reasons. I think most people would have given Ukraine about 72 hours. They reckon they were going to capitulate after 72 hours last February. But the belief in both the Ukrainian people and in the military is very, very significant. The other factor, as you quite rightly pointed out, as well, as the Western support. So the Western support in terms of material, but also in terms of intelligence. So the Americans in particular are providing real-time intelligence to the Ukrainians, so the Ukrainians know exactly where the major Russian concentrations are, where Russia is strong, where Russia is weak, and that's a significant edge and a significant advantage on the battlefield. So if you look at a lot of the open source aircraft radar trackers at the moment, you can see there's almost constantly three or four NATO aircraft up just by the Ukrainian border, and they're providing a complete radar picture to the Ukrainians, and that is a significant edge for any combatant on the field.
Yeah, and I suppose obviously it's giving these tanks is going to escalate things on the battlefield, but does it put other European countries at risk, Cathal?
Well, the assessment is that it does, but a greater risk would be to appease the Russian Federation, the regime in the Kremlin. History has taught us that if there is an authoritarian regime that engages in a war of conquest and a war of choice, that appeasement only encourages them further. So the question mark, and this is what the Germans were most likely debating over the last few weeks, that if Russia wins here and takes over all of Ukraine, that likely Moldova is next, and likely the three Baltic states, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, would be after that as well. So on the balance of probability, yes, I agree with you, it is a risk, but it'd be a far greater risk to do nothing at all.
Okay, what do you think the response of Moscow and Vladimir Putin will be after today's announcement? Do you think there'll be any further, I suppose, erratic behaviour from Moscow?
Yeah, so we've seen the rhetoric already, so a lot of propaganda on the airwaves. That's the impulse response or the instincting response. But I think we're probably looking at a greater mobilisation of Russian reservists. So they've already embarked on a partial mobilisation. So they tell us, at least, they basically stood up about 300,000 additional troops. I'd say they will probably respond by a further, more generalised mobilisation as a result. But again, the Western calculus is quite clear, that if this armoured brigade is formed, and if the Ukrainian armed forces are provided with adequate equipment and with intelligence, that they would estimate that the Ukrainian forces would be quite successful this summer. And like most Western people, want absolutely nothing to do with the conflict. They would much prefer that it never began. They would much prefer a negotiated outcome. But the reality is that the Russians don't want to negotiate. We've all seen the Russian ambassador on RT News basically spinning away to himself. If anybody wants to try and negotiate with an individual or a regime like that, be my guest for sure, but they have no interest in negotiation. And let's remember, the war can stop tomorrow. All it requires is the Kremlin to announce a unilateral ceasefire and a withdrawal of their troops back to the international frontiers that are recognised, and the war stops, basically. It's really as simple as that.
Do you know how the morale is among the Russian troops, from your knowledge, Cathal?
Well, again, I haven't been speaking with any of them, but if you look at the footage, and if you look at the posture and the body language of any prisoners of war that are Russian, the morale seems to be very, very poor. And that's completely to be expected, because many of them are conscripts. Many of them don't even know where they are. Poorly educated, poorly trained, poorly equipped. Some of them aren't being paid. Some of them aren't being fed. And all those things feed into morale and ebb away at the fighting spirit. And I think what Western intelligence sources are hoping for is that if you communicate with the Russian population and say, you're not just fighting Ukraine now, you're fighting Ukraine plus the 30 countries of NATO, plus New Zealand, Australia, and Morocco, and all these countries that you're going to lose here. And what they're hoping to try and do, I suspect, is maybe there might be a palace coup d'etat in the Kremlin. That obviously would be a very good solution if Putin is replaced by a more moderate leader. Alternatively, then you're looking at a general uprising in Russia, similar to what happened in 1917 when Russia was fighting in the First World War. The troops were so poorly paid and poorly led that they rose up against their officers. The officers rose up against the politicians, and you'd complete a regime change then in Moscow.
Okay, well, thanks very much for that, Cathal. That is Cathal Berry there, independent TD for Kildare South and former deputy commander of the Army Ranger Wing, with that news that Germany will send Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine and approve their re-export from partner countries. Thanks very much for joining us, Cathal. Now, we're changing tack a little bit, and we're going over to the Irish language competition, which is Spree. Post-primary schools in Kildare are being invited to join a new Irish language initiative, which is Spree 23. And I'm joined now on the line by Jean Gilger. She's Education Policy and Development Officer at the Education and Training Board Ireland. And she is here to tell us all about the competition. Good afternoon, Jean.
Hi, Cuiva. How are you doing?
Not too bad, Jean. Tell us a little bit about this competition and what it entails.
Yeah, so we're really excited about it. Spree Fahe 3, as we're calling it, launched just this Monday. And it is an initiative to really promote the fun in the Irish language. So we have a number of competitions and activities designed to run from January right through to the end of April and have a prize-giving ceremony in May. It's based on an initiative that we ran for our ETB schools back in 2020-2021 when COVID hit us. And there was a number of initiatives that we ran for the Irish medium schools and English medium schools within the ETB sector. And it was so positive and so rewarding for the students that we said that we'd design something similar for this year. But not only are we extending an invitation to our ETB students, but we're inviting all post-primary students across the country. So all your Kildare schools, we would love for all of you to participate and to really engage. I suppose, you know, part of the design was really to, you know, complement the activities that go on in the teaching and learning in the classroom. You know, so the different activities, it doesn't matter whether, you know, you're really strong with Irish or, you know, you really don't like it. Everybody can engage in these competitions. You know, there's the opportunity to send in an entry, you know, as a solo participant, or you can engage your whole class group. You know, we welcome all different entries and we're really looking forward to it.
So what kind of, I suppose, competition is it, Jean? Like, is it...
So there's six individual competitions. And what's lovely about it is that we're not going to pit the Irish medium schools against the English medium schools. We will run, you know, the competitions concurrently for Irish medium and English medium. There'll be prizes for both the English medium winner and the Irish medium winner. And, you know, fantastic prizes, you know, worth up to €500 per competition. We have six different competitions. I might talk you through each of them briefly.
Yeah,
so the first one, we actually have two kind of long-term, if you want to call it that, competitions that run from January to April. So the first one is Blog na Bliana, where schools are invited to put together a blog and to really highlight different activities that go on in their school and in their locality, and particularly with an emphasis on opportunities for promoting the Irish language. You know, so they can maybe design a newsletter format, or they can, you know, go down the development of a website kind of route. You know, we're open to all different types of entries, you know, in that regard. The second one that I'll talk about is one called Cumarsáid Le Cordaigh. Now, this is the only one that's only open to Irish medium schools. And I know you have a number of Irish medium schools in Kildare. But the lovely thing about this one is that we actually ask schools to register in advance. And what we'll do is we'll pair up schools. So let's say one of your Kildare schools, we might pair with one of our schools down in Cork. And, you know, we can put the teachers in touch with each other and they can, you know, arrange various times, you know, to bring maybe two class groups together online so they could maybe be studying, you know, a novel, the same novel, and they can discuss it, or they can have a little chulkerm and, you know, maybe sing a few songs together, or, you know, just it's really important that, you know, students get the opportunity to meet other students and see that the Irish language is something that is alive and fun. You know, so we're really excited about that one. The next one that's open to both English medium and Irish medium schools is Rap and Roll. So where students are invited to compose a rap. You know, so sometimes, you know, you find with students that, you know, oh God, I don't like to sing, but, you know, you don't necessarily need to be able to sing to rap. You know, and we're basing the theme of the Rap and Roll competition around Tú Seanfhocal. You know, so Tír gan tanga, Tír gan anam, or an Rudasana Vasinta. You don't necessarily have to, you know, use the Seanochal in the wrap, but, you know, it's just to give the students, you know, a team to work with. Mm. So that'll be lots of fun, I'm sure. The next one then is Muskul Mo dot dot dot. So it's, again, engaging maybe students who don't feel hugely confident with Irish, but, you know, can put a few couple of fuchel together, and to design an art piece, either a poster or, you know, some other format, and, you know, really highlight, you know, what their school means to them, and, you know, to give maybe a 100-word explanation around their artwork.
Okay.
Another one that we have, you know, we're all familiar with the Seanochal, you know, Tirgan Tanga, Tirgan Anam, you know, Tuthmal Lanhebra, all of that. But we thought with this one, it might be a nice time for us to revisit our Seanochal and come up with, you know, Seanochal that relates to the here and now, 2023. What are the big issues? You know, what are those kind of one-liners, you know, that we can associate with 2023. So I'm sure students will have lots of fun coming up with new Seanochal. And then our final one then is Bua na Chanta. And this is a competition that revisits kind of an old Gaeltacht tradition of the Lubin or the Agla Berta, where two students come together and, you know, compose, you know, funny verses, and, you know, they perform, you know, together. And it's something that they can really, you know, have lots of fun with, and the whole class can get together in the composition of it, and then for two students to perform it, and they can submit a video of the performance, you know. So there's something there for everybody, and, you know, it'll be, you know, lots of opportunity for teachers to, you know, tie the competition in with, you know, something that they may be doing in school at the time.
Okay, well, that is great information there, Jean. And Jean went through all of those competitions taking place, and fair play. And I love, I had one Seanochal, I used to say Atnín Kiro Kiro Gala.
Oh, good.
And I love that one. Yeah. And all information can be found on events.etb.ie and Spree FIHA 3 or 23. And that is Jean Gilger there, Education Policy and Development Officer with the Education and Training Boards Ireland, with all of that information. Thanks very much, Jean. Coming up after the break, do stay tuned, because we will be speaking to Paul Mescal's mammy about his recent Oscar nomination.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney.
Now, I was speaking about it on the show yesterday, and of course everyone in Kildare knows by now that Maynooth's Paul Mescal has been nominated for a Best Actor Award, an Oscar, for his role in After Sun. Of course, most people know Paul Mescal from Normal People. He, of course, was the star of Normal People. And I'm delighted to say now that I'm joined on the line by Paul Mescal's mammy, Dervla Mescal. Good afternoon, Dervla.
Hi, Caoimhe. How are you? Are you well?
I'm very good. I'd say things are very, very happy over in the Maynooth area today, are they?
They are. They are. Like, it's 24 hours now, literally, I think, nearly since we heard. So I'm just looking at the clock. So, yeah, it's 24 hours of a kind of unbelievable dream coming true, you know, to be nominated, to be in that crew of people, to be in with all this Irish wave is incredible. It's going to make for an amazing night, wherever anybody is in the world. All our Irish people can look in and see incredible, incredible Irish talent. Look at it's just brilliant.
Yeah. And what were you doing when you got the news, Dervla?
As it's now known, I was folding washing, because I was trying to do things. I can't watch them. I had real hard time watching Paul when he played football for Kildare or for his club Maynooth, and I just, so even watching Dunica playing his rugby, I don't do that, it's too hard. So it's easier to be off the radio and just wait and see if I get a phone call from the kids.
So Paul gave you a call then after he got the nomination?
We did, family WhatsApp, all of us looking in and all of our hands to our mouths, because you could see it was just unbelievable.
So
literally.
You'll all fly over to LA then for the awards, I assume.
Yes, that's hope. Well, look, you know what? It's the plan. It's the hope. It's the dream. Like, it's kind of, it's actually surreal, but yeah.
It's still sinking in.
It's pretty magic. It's very much still sinking in, yeah.
And I have to ask you, Dervla, because sure. I always wonder when I watch anything with any actor. But sure. when Paul was in Normal People, right?
Yeah.
And obviously he became an overnight star, really, didn't he? He went from nobody knew him, and then he was famous for his GAA shorts. And, and of course, here in Kildare, he's famous for GAA as well as acting. But is it awkward to watch your son on a sex scene?
No. And I say that honestly. No, it's not, because it's part of the, first of all, it's the character he's playing. So I actually very seldom see Paul as Paul. I usually, you actually see him as the character. And the second thing is, it's part of the story he's telling. It's an important part of the story, particularly in Normal People, that he was telling. And the other aspect is that I knew, because they had everybody in place there, and that he was safe, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, I have to say that doesn't make me worry or get anxious or anything.
Yeah. I'm surprised at that, because I thought he would have been. Yeah.
No.
Tell us, what was Paul like as a child, Dervla?
Oh, that's a really good question. Holy, okay. What was Paul like as a child? He was always very driven. Whatever he was doing, he was always very driven. So I'm very self-motivated. I remember, you know, when they had to do exercises for particular teams, because that's how, you know, Paul literally lived on teams. Like, that's what he did. He was always on some football or rugby team, hurling team. And if he was told to do 20 press-ups, he did 25, or he did. That was just his personality. He just always wanted to be good at whatever he was doing, and it came from himself. He's very self-driven, very, very self-motivated.
And it obviously runs in the family as well, because I know that you're a family of stars, as it seems, that Nell Meskell as well, your daughter, has had a debut single she performed on the Late Late Show.
Yeah, Homesick. Yeah, no, she is, and that now, she knew from, oh my goodness, from a very young age, that's what she was going to do, and singer-songwriter is exactly what she's doing and what she loves.
And she's happy with that. And she was brilliant.
Very happy.
Her on the Late Late Show. Of course,
that was incredible.
Underage, Paul won a Leinster Minor Medals in 2013 with Kildare in 2014. He had all that success. I suppose yesterday came as a little bit of a bittersweet moment for you, Dervla, because as I understand, you were getting ready to get ready for chemo.
There's nothing bittersweet about your child doing something like that. So no, it isn't bittersweet in that sense. That you know what I mean? I don't. Mm. Yeah, I didn't see it like that. No, I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma back in July. So I have been in treatment, kind of just doing what I've been told and getting on with it. And I'm now waiting for. So I've had my stem cells harvested just before Christmas, and now what I wait for is the day to go in to have my stem cells re-put back into my body. That's very untechnical, but that's technically what it is. So multiple myeloma is a blood cancer. I was very lucky. My GP in salvage dust totally read what I was, my ailments, and look, here I am, and I am very lucky. I have a wonderful team, it's going where it's supposed to go, and this is something I will live with and I will get on with. So,
okay, well, look, you seem like you're very positive there, and you'll have great family support.
I do.
You've a family of four in total, isn't that it?
No, I have three children. So I have Paul, I have Donica, and I have Nell, and then my husband.
Excluding your I left him out there. I actually wasn't including him, but we'll bring him in anyway.
No,
What are your children's names?
So Paul is Paul, obviously. Donica, my middle guy, and Nell.
Okay, lovely. And how is Donica doing?
Donica is doing great. He's in New York, and he's learning the ropes in his field, which is HR. And just, you know, in the big Manhattan and Doing the adventure. I mean, doing exactly. I mean, I just am so envious when I see pictures of the New York skyline. So he's just getting on with it.
Very
you know.
Good. Does Paul get to come back to Maynooth much to see you, or is he too busy high flying it around?
No, he lives out of a suitcase for the most part. So he's at the moment he's just been away because he's in the play in London, Streetcar, and so that kind of calls him. In the UK at the moment, and then it depends. So he doesn't get home as often as I'd say he wants to himself, but it is what actors do. You go where the work is and you work if you can get it. So that's what he's doing.
I suppose it's something that people, you know, we always look at actors or, you know, famous people and obviously sure. Paul is famous now and you think, oh, look at that, you're so jealous of the life. But I'm sure, Dervla, it's a difficult life too, always being on the road.
I think it's an incredibly difficult life to be out of a suitcase, going, you know, kind of other people's property, you know, as you're doing whatever work you're doing. But I also think it's an incredible privilege because he is doing what he loves. So, you know, I think most of us want, you know, you kind of, it's always the aspiration that you do what you love because it will make you feel that your work isn't this big overload. And that's exactly what he's doing. But definitely there is, you know, there's the public side of it. There's the private side of it. He is very private and has strived very hard to have that privacy in this crazy social media public world.
Yeah, and I'm sure, look, every parent wants the best for their child. And
you're no different with Paul or any of your other children. No, absolutely. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, you know, you just strive for them to literally thrive.
Well, listen, Dervla, we'll all be rooting for Paul here, obviously. I know he's up against Colin Farrell, but look, I don't think Colin has a chance.
Amazing. well, look, you're very kind. Thank you very much. So, look, thank you very much.
No problem. Dervla, hopefully Paul wins, and if he does, we'll give you a call and we'll get you back on.
Perfect.
And remember us when you're on the streets of LA being interviewed by the CNN and the likes.
That's I will.
Dervla Meskell there, Paul Meskell's mother,
Thanks, Paul Meskell,
nominated for Best Actor in the Oscars for his role in After Sun. And After Sun is it's based on a father-daughter relationship. So if you haven't seen it, definitely do get out and see it before the Oscars in March. And thanks very much to Dervla there. And we wish her all of the best with her recovery from cancer. Thanks very much, Dervla. That's all we have time for today.